sound exciting to you?
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one and only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Demon Hunter!
What do you mean?
It is you, huh? How you doing today, buddy?
I'm not bad. It's one of those days you wake up, you see the sun shining, you know it's going to be absolutely beautiful out.
You get hit by a truck.
So you get in your car and you drive to work and sit in a windowless room for 8 hours.
That's like Dante's Inferno, isn't it? Or so. Is that like the eighth level of hell?
Man. Windowless room. That's radio for you.
See? That's it. That's what we do, buddy. But hey, guys, welcome back to the greatest fans alive, the G&D Show Nation, the Shadow Nation. And it's so good to be here. We're doing so much this week, Demon Hunter. We've been shaking and moving, buddy, and strutting.
Maybe you've been shaking. That might be my palsy that's kicking in on my side. Another old joke at my own expense.
That wasn't an old person's joke. It was. Man, I've been having a hell of a week, man. Hell of a week. Because we had to, I had a big overnight at the funeral home.
Yeah. You're just dying to get into that place, aren't you?
Well, my God. You're full of them tonight. You're so comical. No, we did get into it, though. We'll talk about that here in a little while. It was a crazy night. First time, Demon Hunter, ever in the history of the ghost man's life have I spent the night at a funeral home.
Well, we've spent the night in places that used to be funeral homes.
Yeah, we did do that. We did do that. I don't know. Where was that that we stayed?
You weren't with me when I stayed at the past funeral home up here in New York.
Yeah,
they did that episode of on bio of my ghost story when I spent the night there.
Oh, now I remember. Yeah. Yeah, you did that. I wasn't there.
That was the place that Tennessee Williams. That's a funny joke for you right there. But
Tennessee Williams.
I was sitting there and I was spending the night in this haunted host. Haunted. It's a school now.
Yeah.
But I was in there and I was just like, you know, I want to find out the history of this place. Because, you know, for me.
Right.
All about the history.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm going over the pictures and the all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is a really cool place. And look at this. Tennessee Williams. When Tennessee Williams died by accidentally like swallowing a bottle cap.
Right. Wasn't Tennessee Williams the hound dog or whatever in the cartoon? Didn't it have something like that?
Perhaps, but Tennessee Williams was one of America's greatest playwrights.
Right. Yeah, I knew that.
Menagerie, that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, Tennessee Williams was embalmed here and kept here for his funeral. And somebody looked over and said, the country music star? I said.
You mean the hound dog?
I was like, oh, yeah, the hound dog? I was just like, oh, no.
I'm
no, not
dog.
The country music star. That's Tennessee Ernest Ford.
Yeah. Well, Tennessee, now we know the, what books did you write, did you say?
He wrote Glass Menagerie, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
No, I know that one. I've heard that one. I thought that was just a play.
Yeah. Well, it is a play.
Right.
He's a playwright.
He's a playwright.
Exactly.
So he's an author that writes plays.
Exactly.
See? You're edumacated. And
I'm an edumacated man. They learned me good in school.
They did learn you good. You've learned a lot of stuff on the Hard Knocks here on the radio station.
That's right. Mm. But he died back in 1983. He was 71, I think he was. And
that's kind of young, actually, anymore.
Yeah, I think what they finally determined was he had put something in his drink, but it was like eye dropped or something, and he dropped eye drop dropper, the top of the lid in his drink, and when he went to drink the drink, it got caught in his throat.
What?
It was perfectly shaped to fit in his throat. They could the Heimlich, nothing got it out, and you could tell that he had tried to cough it up, but no luck. He died, and. that's but he went and was buried at he's buried at the Calvary Cemetery in St. Louis, Missouri, which is where he wanted to be buried, but his body was embalmed and taken care of at this place in New York. So
That's kind of a bad way to go. Remember that chick from Mamas and the Papas? My mom used to tell me about that. Remember the band?
Mama? Sandwich?
Yeah, she died on a ham sandwich.
Well, that's kind of an urban legend. Her daughter claims that's not true. Of course, people also say her daughter gave her the sandwich. So. Yeah.
She was a big gal, though, right? That's why she was... They were making fun of it or whatever, probably. Who knows? Anyway, she's not with us.
It was Dennis Leary who said, I think Mama Cass said it best when she said...
Mama Cass. That was her name, Mama Cass.
I'm here for the gangbang.
So it was Mama and the Papas, or was it the Mamas and the Papas?
Mama and the Papas.
Mama and the Papas. So it's one Mama and several Papas.
You know, now you got me questioning myself. See?
Need to Google that. Anyway, Demon Hunter, tonight's band, I know you love them. I picked them out for you. Good friends of ours. This song brings up an interesting question that we'll have to talk about. I think we've done it once before in the show. But tonight's band... COD, Shadow Nation, Circus of Dead Squirrels. Thank you guys for the tunes. We love you.
And Sean, you were right. It was the Mamas and the Papas.
The Papas. So both.
I'm here for the gangbang.
My bad there. And Circus of Dead Squirrels, Sean. And I think at some point during that song, did they say, I want a banana?
No, they brought up a good point. They were a Flintstone kid. Were you a Flintstone kid? We talked about this before.
You know what?
Booberry.
You know I am a fan of taking my vitamins and eating right and that kind of stuff. But when I was a kid, I could care less.
Were you...
The Flintstone vitamins were about the only ones I ate because they tasted like candy.
Yeah.
And But I just didn't care about vitamins when I was a kid. Probably why I'm so sickly now.
Yeah. So you didn't take you took Flintstone vitamins, but you didn't eat Flintstone or Captain Crunch.
Well, when they're saying Flintstone kids, they're talking about the vitamins.
Yeah, the vitamins. I'm a Flintstone kid, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think... Million strong and growing.
Out of Pepe.
See, yeah, we grew up in a poor side of town, and I don't think we couldn't afford Flintstone vitamins, and all you rich people had that kind of luxury. We had
us Pennsylvania Deutsch rich people.
Well, yeah. Well, you're talking about Flintstone vitamins and Captain Crunch and stuff. I had, like, Captain Punch. You know what I'm saying?
Whatever. And Flint Rock vitamins.
See? Flint Rock.
Oh, these hurt. You're getting your minerals.
Get your Flint Rock vitamins.
Not funny, huh? Funny, queer.
They're good for you. Get them while they're hot.
Full of minerals.
Yeah, they keep you alive a long time. That's probably what's wrong with me now. My knees are gone. My knees, they don't feel good.
It's all that Flint Rock gathering down at your knees.
Probably. Hoo-ah! It's all the Flint Rock. That's right. Al Pacino, thank you. But anyway, Demon Hunter, the band, COD.
You lean against something iron and you start fires.
Fires! Shadow Nation, check out more about that band at circusofdeadsquirrels.com.
A roundabout way that we bring you to tonight's music.
Tonight's music. Yeah, usually, we give thanks to Creative Commons and everything. These are friends of the show. They actually gave us permission to play their songs. And thank you, guys. So... Good band. We got a lot of friends of the show that are in the music entertainment business. Is that how you'd say it?
This is true.
Musicians.
We need more friends.
We do.
Music and entertainment business.
If you guys want to be our pals, contact us at ghostanddemon.com. That'd be one more thing, though. One more Christmas card to send out. You know? I don't know
if
I can
send out Christmas cards this year.
I don't know. You've been married over a year. Thanks, Jed. And I still haven't got your... we were just talking about that. Still haven't got your present there. Your wedding gift. I'm a little slow, but I get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You deliver gifts the way I drive. It's...
The way old people... Never heard that one before. That's terrible. You remember that? You drive like old people... No?
No, I had never heard that one before, Sean. I do remember when I got pulled over that night, and the full sentence the cop said, but he said that I drove like a special child eating a cupcake.
He did. He said that there. He was
punching in the mouth.
We were running around the battlefield in Gettysburg, guys, out looking for ghosts. And Nathan had this, what was it, 1960 Oldsmobile?
No. It was a mid-1980s Park Avenue Buick.
Yeah. It reminded me of what Fozzie the Bear and the when the Muppets toured America in their very first one, what they remember the big.
It's actually the car, folks, that when you're driving down the highway and you're on this long stretch of like in traffic, yes, and finally you get to pass that car that was keeping everybody like slowed down, and
you
look over and there's that little old man who can't even see over the dashboard with his hands up at the top of the steering wheel and his head down below the dashboard,
yes,
trying to drive. That's the car that I drove.
That's what you were. You were the old man.
I was the old man.
We called it the mobile
cabinet. That's what we called it, the filing cabinet.
The SS filing cabinet, because you got in and there was case files all over the place. You were like a modern-day Scully.
Yes.
I didn't want to say Mulder. But you did. You were like an X-Files guy.
You'd open the trunk, and I remember you and Doug Semek saying, we'll just throw the gear in the trunk. And you popped over the trunk, and there were literally like file cabinets in the trunk of the car full of cases.
Oh, the good old days. The beginning of the G&D show 7 years ago on that fateful night.
It was was it more than 7 years ago? Because it was 2007. So, yeah, I guess it was 7 years ago.
Yeah, so we have to get back out there and check that out. We haven't been out there. We need to do a big anniversary thing. You know it?
Yeah. Actually, that's 10 years, Sean.
That is 10 years that we first got out
there. This November will be 10 years since you and I decided to start the G&D show, because we're on our 9th year right now.
Oh, my goodness. Our 9th year. We don't look a day over 8 and a half.
I was driving to work today, like I said, and I looked up in the mirror.
Yeah.
And the guy looking back to me had crow's feet. who's that guy?
That's why you keep buying these newer model motorcycles, see?
Yeah, so that I look cool even when I, people have seen my picture on Facebook now. I kind of look cool. Like a cross between Colonel Sanders and Wild Bill Hickok.
You do. You look old.
Oh, come on.
Demon Hunter.
Ghost Man.
Shadow Nation. Without further ado, tonight's guest. Tonight's guest, he's an American film actor and winner of the 2007 Igor Award for a career contribution in the horror genre. Nominated for the Saturn Award in 1978 for Best Actor in the movie, the cult classic, The Hills Have Eyes. Actor Michael Berryman stops by, guys. He's in the house. Most known for his roles, of course, in the Rob Zombie Devil's Rejects, Lords of Salem, and the classic 1977 The Hills Have Eyes. And he's done so much more. We're going to talk to him tonight because actor Michael Berryman stops by on your Mystifying Oracle Radio Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Michael Berryman, Demon Hunter.
Michael Berryman.
Michael Berryman. I'm very excited about it, Mike.
I was saying on Facebook tonight,
yeah,
the one image of Michael Berryman that sticks in my mind, uh-huh, the absolute most, is Weird Science.
Yes, he was in Weird Science, wasn't he?
When he rode in on that motorcycle and ripping up the house, and then The Lisa, the man-made woman, walks down and stops everything, yeah, and he just looks at him and goes, "I'm sorry, you have a lovely home."
He was with that
us.
Motorcycle band from hell or whatever, yeah. Merry Band of Motorcycle Riders, remember?
I do remember.
Yeah, that was a crazy movie. I really liked it.
Those were that was the days of movies. I don't care what anyone says. This is why they're making so many remakes of movies from the 70s and the 80s, yeah, because they were great.
They were the best 70s and 80s. Who was that actress? We was talking about that. My God, was she amazing in every way. I mean, her performance left me spellbounded. You say that?
I'm here for the gang.
Her performance left you unable to stand up after watching her in the theater. That was Kelly LeBrock.
Oh, good.
Kelly LeBrock.
Kelly LeBrock.
We need to find out about her. See where she's at these days. I'm sure she married some high dollar guy. See, we, our paychecks aren't big enough to take care of a chick like that. She'd be like, are you kidding me? You're kidding me. Kelly LeBlanc. Okay. Well,
she's still got the. I guess she's had stuff up until about 2007 that she was doing. In the movies, smaller roles, smaller movies, but nothing recent. I guess she is working on one thing, but that's what IMDb tells me. Anyway,
what's that one thing?
That one thing would be a project with no real information except that it's referred to as Hidden Affairs.
Hidden Affairs.
Hidden Affairs.
It sounds like some Playboy Channel stuff.
Directed by Stephen Eckleberry.
Stephen Eckleberry, Private Affairs. Do you think you'll see that?
He's the big name in it. So
it is a big name. It is a big name. Hey, but you know what? Tonight's guest, Mr. Berryman, Michael Berryman, he's worked with so many great actors, so many great directors, man. We was talking about before the show, Wes Cravens. That did Nightmare on Elm Street, stuff like that. He's been in so many different horror films, both top shelf and B flicks.
He worked with your hero,
Jack Nicholson, in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, man.
One of the greats.
One of the greats. He had a great role in that, too. It's kind of role I would like to do. He just kind of laid there and slobbered. I think I could do that. I could do that role.
That's what you do anyway. They could just come into your house and film you after a day of work, sitting on the sofa. Let you slosh a beer around in your mouth and kind of lean over and
jump around.
Scotty, beat me up.
I could do it. I could do that role, I think. What do you think? That brings up something. What do you think is the best role for you? Shadow Nation, let us know. Email us.
Kaiser.
Huh?
A Kaiser role.
A Kaiser role. No, if you were in Hollywood right now and they said you could have any role you want, what do you think best suits you as an actor or actress, whatever you want to do?
I'd like to work in Westerns.
Really? A Western?
Scotty.
I'd love to help bring back the Western. Every few years, they do a new Western to kind of like commemorate the good old days of John Wayne and Clint Eastwood and... then they mess it up every now and then by doing something like Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
It was a good movie, but it was and I understand the thinking behind it.
Had Harrison Ford in it.
When we were kids, we'd be playing cowboys and shooting pop guns at each other, and the one kid would show up with nothing but the space gun that he has, and all of a sudden it would be Cowboys and Aliens, and they turned it into that. They turned that game as a child into a movie. But for me, the Western is sacred. You can't mess with the Western.
As far back on the Western trail as I go is the Clint Eastwood spaghetti Westerns. That was it for me. On Saturday mornings... you'd sit around, watch your cartoons all day, back when there was no Cartoon Network. It was just on every network. You had the cartoons. But, you know, after that, they would have the ABC Weekend Special, which was usually, you know, for kids. And then you would have the evening movie or the afternoon movie. And it would always be like a spaghetti Western. Or Kung Fu. Remember Kung Fu with Grasshopper?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. He would wander the earth. He'd wander the earth looking for, I don't know. It's the devil's music. What was he looking for? It's the devil's
music. Oh, in Kung Fu?
Yeah, what was he searching for? Barefoot, wandering the world?
He wasn't searching. He was in the movie Kung Fu, TV series Kung Fu, he had been banished from China, or actually escaped from China, for having laid hands upon a relative of... the emperor.
Laid hands on himself.
Yeah, well. You know, they would have these... they would have people...
You'd be banished for life.
The emperor's family was holy. You couldn't touch him.
Right.
And I guess they attacked his mentor, and he beat up the emperor's cousin or whatever.
Oh.
He had to escape China, and he came to the U.S.
Right.
Where he was always on the move... for fear that the Chinese emperor's men would find him.
Yeah.
And, you know, put him to death. So.
And they would come after him, and they would... He would whoop some people, though. He'd whoop them down with that little cane he had, remember?
Oh, yeah.
He carried a big stick and spoke softly.
And that was originally going to be Bruce Lee's role, but they felt that Bruce Lee was too Asian for the role.
too Asian for the role.
Too Asian for the role in Kung Fu.
Wow. He was a martial arts expert. What is Kung Fu exactly? We need to have a martial art expert come on. Is it karate?
Well, no, it's
explain it to me.
The Chinese martial art. It's not karate. Karate is in itself more of a Northern Japan Korean style of fighting. It means open hand. It's open hand fighting, where Kung Fu is the Chinese martial art.
Okay, I got you. Martial art.
But going back to those old Western movies, like I said, John Wayne was my hero growing up. Saturday mornings were spent with my dad watching John Wayne movies.
Absolutely.
And to this day, El Dorado, with John Wayne and Robert Mitchum, you know, those were the movies I lived for.
See,
was in that one.
The only John Wayne movie that I really ever liked was, what was the one with the guy from Happy Days in it? Whatever his name was.
Ron Howard?
Yeah, remember he was the smart aleck kid.
That was the shootest. The last Western that John Wayne ever made.
Yeah.
The last movie John Wayne ever made.
Right. Exactly right.
And based on a man, an old cowboy rides out of the West.
See?
Hangs up his guns, only to find out that he's dying of cancer.
Yeah.
Has to go into a shootout one last time.
And he goes out in style. Like,
symbolized his life.
Hey, you just told the whole plot. Nobody's going to watch it now.
You have to watch it, folks.
You blew it. You can't go back now and say, you have to watch it, folks.
You have to watch The Shootist. It's history right there, folks.
It was good. Have they remade that yet? They made everything else.
They better not remake that.
Well, I don't know.
I'm already mad that they remade True Grit.
Hey, that was good. I like True Grit.
I liked the remake of True Grit, but still, for me, True Grit is John Wayne. Even though the new version is literary.
Right, right.
More literary correct.
Literally correct. Say that five times real fast. Say it.
It's literally literary correct. literary. I don't know. But it's closer to the story itself, the way it was written. But I just loved John Wayne in that. I did. It was the Wayne. It was the Duke.
It was the Duke. My dad liked it. But Clint Eastwood,
I'm here for the gangbang,
has got him beat. I'm sorry.
No, Clint Eastwood is good. I love Clint Eastwood, man, but he's no John Wayne.
He's no John Wayne. Okay, well, I guess it's the era. You do got about 50 years on me, so. 50 years on me.
Liar!
Exactly.
50 years and 5 inches from what I've been told.
That's terrible. Shadow Nation, without further delay, Demon Hunter.
Because we've delayed enough.
We have. In the news. You ready for this?
I'm always ready.
It's always fresh. It's always exciting. A little bit strange, a little bit weird and sexy. And it starts right
now.
Ooh, that was good. That was good.
That's right, folks. It's time for when Sean and I bring you G&D in the News, where we pick the news stories out of the weekly news tales by the titles. We do not read them beforehand, so whatever's in those stories is as new to us as it is to you. Because we haven't read them, we tend to make a lot of mistakes, and when we do make mistakes, we all take a drink. That's right, it's the G&D drinking game.
Drink up.
Ask if you are listening to this broadcast in your car driving, don't play along. And if you're planning to drive home from somebody's house tonight after sitting around and listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show, please listen responsibly.
Do it. In the news, Demon Hunter, I'm going to lead us off to bat. Living chupacabra captured by Texas couple. It's got a big fat question mark. Living chupacabra captured by Texas couple? Question mark. I didn't read it right. The Huffington Post, thanks guys. David Moy is the person who wrote the article. And they do. They got a picture of him here, but you guys can look it up. Kind of looks like a deformed raccoon or something. I don't know. Anyway, Demon Hunter, Shadow Nation, a couple in Ratcliffe, Texas has captured a creature. Huh?
Maybe it's a rat.
It might be. They captured a creature that they believe may prove the existence of the mythical Chupacabra. Huh? Jackie Stock says her husband, Bubba, found a strange-looking animal demon hunter eating corn in a tree Sunday night and managed to contain it.
He pulled it out of his cornhole?
He poured it out of his cornhole. Bubba pulled it out of his cornhole. When trying to identify the species, Stock noticed... Wait. When trying to identify the species, Stock noticed the animal's hairless back. Drink up, guys. I don't know who Stock is. Did they say that earlier? We got Bubba and Stock. Okay, Jackie Stock. That's her last name. Drink up, guys. Notice the animal's hairless back, large claws, countless teeth, and ferocious growl. He came to one conclusion. It's probably the conclusion all of us would have came to. You ready?
Reach into this thing's cornhole?
Cornholed it. He came to one conclusion, Demon Hunter. He called me to come and look, and I said, Bubba. This is in quotations. It's exactly what you said. Bubba, that looks like a baby chupacabra. End quote. Stock told CrossroadsToday.com.
Liar!
You ready for this?
I'm always ready.
They found. Others aren't so sure. Phyllis Canyon, drink up, guys, a nutritionist from the nearby town of Curo, drink up, guys, has a similar-looking creature preserved in her home that some think might also be a chupacabra. Canyon, drink up, guys, visited the Stocks and checked out their supposed chupacabra. She noticed some significant differences between the animal and her Texas blue dog. These people in Texas, man. The feet definitely belong to a raccoon, Canyon told, drink up, guys, told the Huffington Post. Also, its eyes are brown, where mine has blue eyes. I don't know what it is, but I'd like to analyze its DNA, she said. Canyon said Stock is working, drink up, guys, Stock is working with a veterinarian to get the sample. But Stock's neighbor, Arlen Parma, doesn't agree with the raccoon hypothesis, Demon Hunter. She don't agree.
What's the worst that could happen if you give him the DNA? It finds out that you don't have a chupacabra and you can't put it by the roadside in a cage and collect a dollar from everybody who drives by to take a look at it.
Well, apparently Arlen, drink up, guys, Arlene or Arlen are at war with Phyllis and Arlen there in the freaking Texas. You getting all this? Maybe we can move out there.
Getting every word of it.
See? She doesn't agree with the hypothesis about the raccoon. You know, I hunted raccoons, she says, for 20 years with dogs and all that, and I've never seen anything that looks like that right there, Parma said. According to the KHON2.com, a raccoon don't make their noise. A raccoon don't make that noise. Or a possum. What makes that noise? Question mark. I guess a chupacabra does. I don't know. Huh?
Well, then it must be a chupacabra, Sean.
It has to be. Brent Ortega, wildlife diversity biologist from Texas Park and Wildlife, believes that the caged creature is most likely a small canine, such as a coyote, dog, or fox, KFOR-TV reports. Huh?
Says, and that comes to us from Huffington Post?
That's right. That's what I said at the very beginning. It hasn't changed. Ah, I got you, didn't I? See? Got you. Caught you off guard. Living chupacabra captured by Texas couple. Demon Hunter.
Hey, you know what? I've got a really short one here, Sean. Reminds me of you.
You do have a short one. Ah, you beat me to it, man. God, you're good.
It's just a blurb that I caught going through the news. Japanese mob creates cheesy recruiting video.
Okay.
Cheesy recruiting website.
All right.
You have to have a drink just because I read the wrong one.
You got a drink, though.
Can the internet save the Japanese mob?
I don't think they can.
Japan's largest crime group.
Yeah.
Get ready to drink, folks. The Yamaguchi Gami.
Oh.
The largest sector of the Yakuza have launched a website, in effect, to improve their image and encourage new members to join.
Oh.
Now, Sean, there's not a whole story. There's video and stuff on Huffington Post if you want to go in and check this out.
Right.
But what it comes down to is they believe that drugs are the downfall of society.
Drugs?
Drugs. So the mob is fighting the drug use of China.
Okay.
Or Japan, excuse me. The mob is fighting the drug use of Japan.
Right.
And, but they don't really, it doesn't stop them from murdering and extorting and whoring now people and stuff like that. They just don't drugs involved. Oh, so they've made this whole website of them at like senior citizen homes and Buddhist temples and
temples.
You know, okay. Yep. Just doing good works to get more people to join.
Right.
So it's the anti-drug organization known as the Japanese mob, the okay. Yamaguchi Gumi, now looking for new members.
You gonna join?
You know, I'm in enough organizations at this point, John. I think
top secret organizations. You're in. Is that it for that story?
That's it for that story.
That was a good one, though. I like it. Huffington Post, thanks a lot. Here's another story from our good friends, the Huffington Post. 700-year-old poop barrels, demon hunters, still stink, researchers say. Huh?
You don't say.
Did you guys get that? You don't say. 700-year-old poop barrels still stink, researchers say. Here we go. Ah, the sweet smell of raw history. Archaeologists excavating the medieval town of Odense in Denmark recently uncovered some barrels of old poop. Estimated to be about 700 years old, the buried latrines are said to have kept their contents in excellent condition. Apparently, they smell just awful. 700 years.
Now we know what they were eating back then.
See, exactly. These excavated barrels are among those containing the 700-year-old poop. The barrels were dug up as part of what's shaping up to be the largest urban archaeological, drink up, guys, excavation in Danish history, according to the Copenhagen Post. The area is just ripe with archaeological gold. Brick houses, half-timbered houses, and stables have all been found there. But it's the old town's communal toilet that seems to be getting everyone's attention for one reason or another. Probably the smell, I would think. Why study old poop, demon hunter? Huh?
It would tell you what people were eating in that time, Sean.
You think so?
Yeah, they could break it down, find out what they were eating.
Berries and stuff.
You know, it's like that old saying. I bet you grew up in school being told that Greenland was called Greenland and Iceland was called Iceland to trick people to move to Greenland.
I was never taught that in school.
That's an old urban myth that people tell all the time, that people were told to that Greenland, they should move to Greenland to trick them into moving there. But the fact of the matter is, at the time when the Vikings were inhabiting Greenland, Greenland was green.
Green Greenland, imagine that.
The Earth's temperature was much warmer due to volcano eruptions at the time, and they actually raised sheep, and they discovered this by checking out, get this, the poop and basically the old kitchens where they'd leave bones and stuff like that. When they first moved to Greenland, they were living on sheep that were raised on the hills of Greenland. And then later on, when the Earth started to cool down again, they switched to eating more seafood and whale and everything else that they could get from the oceans, because the actual fields of Greenland were no longer green. But this is the kind of thing you can learn by studying poop.
Poop!
That's poop.
It's amazing that you know so much about poop.
I am a poop specialist, remember?
I think you are.
Hey, Bill Clinton!
I wasn't done!
That's a good I'm a poop specialist. Good lead-in for Bill Clinton.
Do it. Go ahead. I like it.
Bill Clinton is quoted as saying, "I wouldn't be surprised by an alien visit."
Oh.
NBC News tells us. This is written by Harry Austin of NBC News.
Okay.
Former President Bill Clinton said he wouldn't be surprised if Earth was eventually visited by aliens.
Really?
Really. It goes on to say, "I don't know," he said, when quizzed by on the subject by talk show host Jimmy Kimmel on Wednesday.
Jimmy Kimmel, drink.
Kimmel, excuse me.
Kimmel. Yeah.
But how come that's the one word you knew? But if we were visited someday, I wouldn't be surprised. Just hope it's not like Independence Day.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
Added, we know now we live in an ever-expanding universe.
Right.
We know there are billions of stars and planets out there, and the universe is getting bigger.
Well, yeah.
However, Clinton also explained that he had reviewed the subject during his time in the White House and found no evidence of alien life. We know from our fancy telescopes that just in the last 2 years, we have discovered more than 20 planets that have been identified outside our solar system that seem to be far enough from the suns and dense enough that they might be able to support some form of life. So it makes it increasingly less like that we are alone.
Oh!
And I actually read that the way he said it.
Okay.
But
Bill's getting deep.
That's from NBC News.
NBC.
Harry Austin.
Thank you. WNBC. Okay, I got the next and the last, Demon Hunter. Unless you got another one. You got another good one, don't you?
I've got one. It's not great. Just that a man wanted $140 out of his ATM in Maine. And it spit out $37,000.
Oh, my God. How do I get that to work for me?
A malfunctioning ATM bank in Maine has dispensed $37,000 in cash to a man who requested $140. Southport police say they responded to the TD Bank branch Thursday morning after getting a call from a woman who said a man was spending an unusual amount of time in the ATM she was waiting to use. Officers found him stuffing cash into a shopping bag.
Why not?
The money was returned to the bank. Bank officials say they don't want to press charges, but police continue to investigate. The man hasn't been charged. A bank official describes the problem as a code error and says no customers' accounts were affected.
Very good. Very good. And the bank's not pressing charges.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're not pressing charges, but the police are still investigating, which makes you wonder, does he have like one of those light sticks they use on slot machines, or are they just are they just suspicious in general? And I mean, it sounds like a suspicious town because I've waited a long time in front of an ATM. You know, nobody's ever called the cops on me.
Small town. Anyway, guys, that's G&D Show. Today's news.
Did you have another story for a show?
That was it. We're going to end the news segment on a whopping 5 stories. We had a lot tonight. A lot of news there.
We did. It was fun.
Some weeks we don't have a lot of news. This week we do.
I didn't get quite as drunk this week as I normally do reading the news.
That's right. Anyway, Demon Hunter, we never got to talk about... I said I was going to for the G&D Nation. We never spoke about what I did last night.
That's right.
Yes. I want to take a moment, maybe 5 minutes, 5 moments, to speak about it. Last night, guys, you might not know, but I got invited out to a haunted funeral home in southern Indiana and must remain undisclosed. I cannot say the name per the owner, but I got to really be careful, Nathan.
Because Johnson's and Sons might come after you.
They might. Oh, no. But,
oh, no.
Oh, no. Run away. Run away. God. Yes. Thanks, Jed. But they, Jethro, they asked me to come out. So I got, you know, what gear I have. I brought out the camera. Scary Jerry went with me to hold the camera. I was trying to do what me and you were talking about starting, was doing those little webisodes, more so than usual, live reporting for the G&D Show. So I went out there and I tried to do a small piece on the funeral home. But being inside that funeral home at night was so amazing to me. You know, you got the, what do you call the tables up front? I'm sure they got the coffin cart, I guess, that they lay the coffins on.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's like a stand that they put the coffins on. And, you know, we walked in and it had this, it's a real old house, this funeral home we went to, and they converted it into, you know, a funeral home. And the guy took us around. He showed us where the embalming room used to be. Now it's a dressing / storage room, but it still has the old tile floors and the drain in the middle. So, you know, leave it up to your imagination. And he said a lot of the activity was coming from downstairs. And it's, you know, classic old 1800s house downstairs, you know, concrete somewhat, a lot of dirt floors, brick. So we went down there and we started doing some ghost box session, and we started, you know, anything we can do, asking questions. We heard some things. I haven't got to review the evidence yet, but, you know, just overall creepiness by being in the funeral home, you know? Because what do you think? That brings up a good thing. Shadow Nation, Demon Hunter, what do you think about a place of burial or death like that? You think spirits will stay there, or would they be more to get out, get away, because it's so depressing?
Well, you know, it's a whole idea of somebody, my belief, you know, my belief in ghosts, Sean, is that we're not dealing with the spirit, per se, of a person, a soul of a person.
Per se.
A ghost. We're dealing with a remnant of their being.
Per se.
Much like the voodoo, Haitian voodoo believe that there's a smaller part of your soul
yes.
that dissipates when you die.
Right.
And if you're bad, the Bokor can bring that back together and punish you even after your death by punishing that part of you. But your larger soul, your grand Lamage, or Lamage, that's cheese.
I realize you just said a word that half of our listeners, more than 70% of our listeners, have no idea, including myself.
But your larger part of your soul,
maybe you should explain,
can actually travel, get away.
Yeah.
Where the smaller part of your soul, the petite part of your soul, it dissipates. And, right. you know, I think that sometimes maybe it's that small piece of your soul that's left behind that we're dealing with. Or you're a small part of your spirit. And it's what scientists would consider that electrical current that travels through our body.
Okay.
That retains some little knowledge of who we once were.
Yeah.
And your body dies, and you're looking down at it, and you follow it to the funeral home, and all of a sudden you say, oh my gosh, I'm dead.
I'm out of here. Right. Right.
And you know, some spirits might say, I'm out of here. But maybe other spirits can't handle that realization that they're dead. And so they stay right there until their body comes back.
Right. I don't know. But I know one thing. I walked in and that stand was there. And it had the creepy lights on both sides, Nathan, with the red glow to them, you know, sparking up on the ceiling. And I laid back on the coffin cart, you know, just to check it out. And I seen what, you know, you would see if you're laying back in the box. And there's not a lot to look at. You know, it's just a white spackled ceiling.
There wasn't a painted, you know, Zeppelin album?
No, like a naked lady or something, you know. If you got to sit there in the box all day. There was no bodies there while we were there, though. That's why they had to wait to let us in, because they had funeral service there all day long. And then we got to come in. But it still had that creepy smell. You know, you used to work at a funeral home.
Well, I've done work in funeral homes. I didn't work for the funeral home itself.
Right. But you've been at a funeral home late at night.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, there you go. But it was creepy. You know, we did hear some cracks, some pops, stuff like that. It's an old house. I haven't reviewed the evidence, but rest assured, Shadow Nation, if we find something, Demon Hunter and myself, we'll get it up to you toot sweet.
That is correct, sir. Hey, by the way, some people wanted to know what the haunted place was that I was at, or the funeral home. It had been a funeral home. Now it's a school. It was called the Patchett House.
Oh,
New York.
Are you in the chat room?
I am now. I just checked it out, but that's not where they asked me. They emailed me.
No, they emailed you. I know a lot of people have been saying, you guys don't check your email no more, chat room. Guys, we tried to get in there during the show. We've got so much stuff going on with the control.
Yeah, in fact, I just turned it on, and it started messing with my sound, so I'm going to turn it back off.
Yeah, I see that. I got the little echo there. Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Yeah, it happens every once in a while. It's overloading the board, the system.
Huh? Maybe if I didn't have a computer from 1993, it would...
you never know. You might... you're getting a new one, though, right? Didn't know.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get a new one.
Listen to that.
XP isn't going to work anymore.
I know, I heard that. You hear that?
I hear that. What does that mean, Sean?
It means it's time for... You ready? Legend X!
Dun, dun, dun.
Legend X, guys. It's a G&D original series. That means Nathan and myself came up with it, where we scour the universe. Maybe not the universe, but our planet, our big, blue, beautiful planet. And we find each week a new legend, from Bigfoot to the Frogman to the Lizardman to Resurrection Mary, who roams the cemeteries, and the lonely hitchhiking ghost on those back roads. The Mothman, And each week, we bring them right here to you. Tonight's Legend X is...
Buried Alive.
There it is.
You know, Sean, we were looking around for a cool legend to talk about this week. Like I said, Sean and I like to find our favorite stories. And it occurred to me, Sean, that you and I are always talking about Edgar Allan Poe.
We are.
And a lot of Edgar Allan Poe's stories do end or are based on somebody's either their fear of being buried alive or them actually being buried alive.
Right.
Because Edgar Allan Poe had a huge fear of being buried alive.
Edgar did? I didn't know Edgar did.
Oh, yeah. Edgar Allan Poe, huge fear of being buried alive. There's actually a whole group of people afraid of being buried alive. And the urban legend, and I found this information I'm going to read to you folks now from cracked.com.
Cracked.
But it is information regarding one of the top five urban legends that actually turned out to be true.
Oh.
Buried alive falls among them. Some poor schmuck.
Schmuck.
Don't get to grip with this one, folks. Well, you can if you want to. Like I said, as long as you're not driving. Some poor schmuck committed to his or her eternal resting place, even though they're not quite ready to take the final dirt nap.
Okay.
Scratch marks are later found on the coffin lid,
ooh,
along with other discreet signs of their escape.
Okay.
Okay, this is not only happened, but back in the day, it happened with alarming regularity.
Regularity, right.
In the late 19th century, William Tebb tried to compile all the incidents of premature burial medical sources of the day could provide. He managed to collect 219 cases of near
is that the hair removal?
And 149 cases of actual premature burial.
Right.
And a dozen cases where the dissection of embalming had begun on a not yet deceased body.
Okay.
That's always been my big fear, that they'll stick that embalming tube in me and then I'll go, ow!
Yeah, I don't think once they stick that tube in you, you're going to go, I think if you did say ow, it'd be real short, you know? Because they stick that, what do you guys call that, what do they call that hook that they debout
you with?
Well, or they pop your stomach and get all the gas out so you won't fart in the box.
I think that's when you'd wake up and go, ow!
Yeah. Well, I read a book one time called Curtains by Michael Orton, and he said that, you know, it was an undertaker in training. He said when he put that spear into the guy's belly to release the gas, he actually pierced the spine. He couldn't get it back out. Ah!
Now, this may seem ridiculous.
Oh, it doesn't.
But keep in mind, this was an era where doctors such as the esteemed Dr. Gregory House weren't around to gain their ability to solve your ailments in 42 minutes.
Right.
If you went to the doctor with the flu in those days, it was likely that he would treat you with leeches.
Oh.
And prescribe you heroin.
There you go.
It
worked, huh?
To suppress your cough.
There you go.
The only method of determining if a person had died was to lean over their face and scream, "Wake up!"
That's foolproof.
Over and over again. If you didn't react, they buried you.
Wake up! God, we could have been doctors, Nathan.
We could. Hey, see? I think that I'm going to be called Dr. Demon Hunter from now on.
That's right, Dr. Demon Hunter. I like that.
The concern over being buried alive was so real that it must have been a hot ticket item for the wealthy to buy safety coffins that allowed you to sit to wake up inside and signal the outside world.
I've heard about these.
By ringing a bell or raising some type of flag. By the way, Sean, this is where the term dead ringer comes from.
Oh yeah.
Someone would be buried and they would a few weeks later, someone would see somebody who looked just like them, and they'd say, there's a dead ringer, because they would have thought that that person had been buried and must have been dug up because they were buried prematurely.
So they didn't put them in vaults back in the day, I'm thinking.
Nope, not like they do now.
Okay.
Should they awake 6 feet under, though, answering the bell would have taken answering that bell sound like a good wait. I'm gonna take a pause for the cause. So answering that bell like a good way. It's written wrong. I'm sorry. Answering that bell sounds like a good way to get ambushed by a zombie, if you ask me.
Epic fail.
Unfortunately, safety coffins are no longer in vogue.
Oh, come on.
So if you're in a cemetery and you hear a muffled voice saying from under the ground saying, okay, guys, the joke's over, let me out, it might be a good idea to inform someone to get a shovel quickly.
A shovel?
Well, that would be about, well, you know, you and I, we've worked on digging a 6 foot deep hole, Sean. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah, we've done that before. We've actually buried people before.
We've buried a friend alive, yes.
That's what we did. That is spooky, though, Demon Hunter. I mean, that kind of stuff that really happened back in the day, they would see the people claw on the coffins, huh?
Oh, yeah. They would dig up the bodies and find that the person had tried to dig their way out using their fingernails, and their fingernails had actually been found inside the wood.
Oh, my God.
Now, consider that this fear wasn't just in the 1800s. It went earlier than that. George Washington himself had a fear of being buried alive.
Oh.
On Saturday, December 14th, just before Washington's death, at about 10 o'clock, he made several attempts to speak. He was his throat had swollen, so he was unable to speak.
Right.
And at last, after making an effort, he was able to say, I am just going. Have me decently buried, and do not let my body be put into the vault in less than 3 days after I am dead. I bowed
Yes.
He then looked at his servant. Uh-huh. Do you understand me? He replied, yes. George Washington died, and they waited 4 days to bury him, mm-hmm. just to make sure that he was in fact dead before putting him in the ground.
Had to start stinking a little bit.
Well, you know, they, like I said, they didn't embalm back then, so.
Oh, good grief!
But yes, George Washington, having passed away, December 15th, they waited 4 days before they put him in the ground, and then ordered his coffin at 6'3.5" long.
Wow. Did he ever come back, though? Did they find out?
Yes. He came back, Sean. And
he did. Man, you just made history live on the G&D show.
Hey, if Abraham Lincoln can be a vampire hunter, George Washington can be a zombie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And actually, Abe is a zombie hunter, too. I seen that the other day.
I saw that.
Yeah. Abe apparently was everything. Demon Hunter, the hour's up on us. It is time. What do you think? Take a break?
We could take a break. I'd just like to tell people that Walking Dead is over, folks.
Yes.
It's over till October, so obviously...
Over till October.
The Walking Dead is off the air.
Right.
There's no fear of zombie attacks.
Oh, right.
Life imitates art as much as art imitates life. So as long as there's no Walking Dead on the air, we're safe.
All right, guys. We're going to take a break. Tonight's guest... American film actor Michael Berryman, most known from his work on the Rob Zombie flicks, Devil's Rejects, Lords of Salem, of course the classic 1977, The Hills Have Eyes, all coming up tonight on your Mystifying Oracle of Radio. Tonight's band, Demon Hunter.
Yes, Mr. Burris.
It's going to be a different song. I'm not playing the same one. Circus of Dead Squirrels, guys. Stay tuned, Demon Hunter. We will be right...
John Wildman from Mysteries at the Museum on Travel Channel, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Hey, that's right. Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Demon Hunter, what are you doing? Did you put yourself back in? Well, I don't know. They should be right back in here, guys. Demon Hunter.
There we go. Sorry.
You always do that. It's like a surprise, like a Cracker Jack.
I got to talk to the guest. It's
Well, apparently Mike's awesome because you can't. You didn't show up for your own radio show. Can we all share Michael?
He's too cool.
Anyway, guys, since Nathan's already hogged Mike, let's introduce him to the rest of the people. Tonight's guest, he's an American film actor. He's award winner of the 2007 Igor Award for his career contribution in the horror genre. He was nominated for the Saturn Award in 78 for the best actor in The Hills Have Eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, Shadow Nation, help us welcome to studio actor Michael Berryman. What's up, Mike?
Yeah. Hey, that'd be me, bro. We're doing really good. So what is scarier, being a demon hunter or a ghost hunter?
Well, I don't being on the set of some of your movies, I think.
Well, there could be some demons that drive me in my movies, but the results are they're all on you. So if you wake up in the middle of the night, turn the hall light on, that means we did a good job. What can I tell you?
Well, you know, we started out, I grew up in a haunted house, and Nathan has dealt with ghost stuff all his life, Mike, and we just kind of got into this field with the horror genre, the flicks, and then going out looking for ghosts and, you know, all this kind of stuff, and we found out there's weird stuff really happening. Just last night, I was talking before you came on, I went to a haunted funeral home. And it was, you know.
Wow, what's that like?
It was sick, man. It was insane. I was scared to death. I've had a thing since I was a kid about funeral homes anyway. So it was spooky.
I used to deliver flowers in Los Angeles for, weddings, bar mitzvahs, the prom and, you know, people at hospitals. And then we'd also take wreaths to funeral parlors. So we always had to get a signature. I'll never forget one day I was at, a major, big funeral parlor, and you know, you always push a button and someone's supposed to come and sign for them, you know, because they're expensive. You know, they're beautiful, lots of flowers.
Right.
And I had a lot of deliveries to make that day, and I'm waiting. Nobody's coming, so I start opening doors, and I walk in on this one double door, open in, and there's the whole room. It's all refrigerated. There's a whole bunch of stiffs. Somebody actually had their chest cavities folded up over their heads, or, you know, they're doing the entrails and they're wearing tuxedos. And this guy's running down the hallway. He goes, "You can't be in there." I ain't never going back in there.
And you were saying, flower delivery, man.
Well, I had told Sean that when I was in my early 20s, I was looking for a place to live. And I went to check out this one apartment. And, of course, it was right over a funeral home. And I kind of thought, I can deal with this. You know, that's going on downstairs. I'll be upstairs. And they took me down to the laundry room to show me where the laundry room was. And the door across from it's wide open. And it's the embalming room.
Oh, lovely, isn't it?
I'm like, we're not gonna. There's no chance we could mix up the cleaning detergents here, right? In the end, the funny part of that story is what wound up keeping me from renting the apartment was the smell of flowers in the place. Well, I can deal with the embalming fluid, but the smell of flowers is just too much.
There's something wrong with you, boy.
They've been telling me that for years.
Now, I do know that if there's a haunting or a spirit, sometimes you can smell flowers.
Yeah, they say that. Or burnt smoke or something like that, pipe smoke.
Yeah, but sometimes flowers. Now, when I did the X-Files Revelations, there was a scene where I'm in the coroner's office room with Scully.
Oh yeah.
And and Mulder shows up and Scully asks Mulder, and she says, "Will you check out, you know, Mr. Owen, Mr. Jarvis?" And he goes, "Well, what do you want me to do?" He says, "I want you to smell him because you want me to smell him." And she goes, "Don't you smell a slight floral fragrance?" And he goes, "No, why?" And she goes, "Well, when I was in school, I learned that people that were incorruptibles or, you know, what have you, when they pass, they have a slight floral essence, and that's what I smell with Mr. Jarvis being me." And then, Scully says, "Oh, what are you saying? This is St. Owen." And she goes, and then we got the scene carries on from there. So there is some validity to that. I mean, it does happen.
No, you know, that brings up a good point, Mike. Everything you just said, you were talking about when you started out delivering flowers and stuff. How did it all start for you, brother? I mean, because you've done so much amazing stuff. I mean, where did it start? I don't even know where to begin with this interview, you know? You've been all over the place.
Well, I've been all over the place. I'm actually leaving. I'll be in New York at Tribeca Film Festival in about 9 days. I did a little short, and I will answer your question after this.
Well, yeah.
It's a little short called One Please. You can check it out on the internet. It's a 14-minute silent short about creepy ice cream man, suburbia, a little girl hears the ice cream man and wants to have an ice cream. And it was written, produced, and directed by Jesse Burke, who is an orthopedic surgeon out of Arkansas.
Okay.
And his hobby is to make little short films. Well, it did well at Sundance at the short end of town, which for the shorts is called Slam Dance. It was a late entry. They had 100 late entries, and out of 100, they chose ours.
Oh, wow.
One Please. And now it's going to be at Tribeca in New York, and I'll be there in about 9 days to help promote it. I have an art degree from University of California. I wanted to homestead in Alaska, work with nature conservation, habitat preservation. Those issues are very dear to me because I went to veterinary college for, for 2 years. That was my education by intent. However, realized that my birth defects in my hands, et cetera, would have not allowed me to be a very good veterinarian, but I did study quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I did wind up in Venice Beach, California, my hometown, Santa Monica, surfing, Dogtown, et cetera, California boy. And I met George Powell, who walked across the street to my little arty farty, you know, shop where my other artists had stuff on the wall in our shop. And we also sold, you know, little house plants. So I was never a florist. I delivered flowers.
Oh.
But so that's kind of the stuff you could, you know, research on the internet. And I was never a florist. But I did meet George Powell. He put me in Doc Savage and he got me my SAG card. And then his casting director was casting for another movie. As I was getting ready to pack up and go to either Northwest Territories or Alaska, and it was for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And,
yeah,
you know, after 127 days working with some of the best in the business ever, seven Oscar winner film. I said, well, this is artistic, and I think let's see where this leads. And it would lead to The Hills Have Eyes.
I mean, right out of the ballpark, Mike. I mean, a lot of people would say, I mean, you worked hard, but a lot of people would say, wow, getting a start like that. This guy gets all the breaks. I mean, working with Jack Nicholson.
No, I didn't get all the breaks. Are you kidding me? I lost so many jobs with my birth defects and disabilities over the years.
Right.
I wanted to be a chef. I'm going to have my own restaurant. I had a little one for 2 years while I was in college, but between my issues with my skin, issues with not being able to perspire, heat issues and what have you. I had to struggle. I worked a lot of I won't say the F word, but a lot of crap jobs.
Oh yeah,
I've done jobs from washing dishes to scraping bird poop underneath exotic bird ranches in Sonoma to taxi driver, occasional bail bondsman support. Deputized officer to go pick up people that didn't show up in court to, oh gosh.
Well, the funny thing is, Mike, you're
right. That's another weird job. There must be one more. Hang on. One more weird job I had. A lot of food and beverage. Oh my God. And then, being an actor, what can I tell you?
Well, the funny thing, Mike, is you're rattling off all these jobs that Sean and I are still doing to try and get by.
Well, you do what you have to do.
Yeah.
The main thing is if you have family and your health and you take care of yourself and you realize the world's pretty screwed up and the things that really need to happen are discussed mostly at horror conventions or people in our genre, because we're not ruled by the lunatic fringe that pretty much kind of runs the world, but our children get a chance to make it better and they know the difference. So when the douchebags die out, we might have a chance at liberty.
That's it.
In our country and the world,
That's
to be
it.
Quite frank.
Yeah,
you've obviously got that focus on the kids for tomorrow.
Without them, what's the point?
Yeah,
I grew up in the 1950s, and I remember they said, splitting the atom was a great thing. After we can, destroy the whole world with a bomb,
There'll
be no more war. That's a bunch of crap. A five-star general, president of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower, warned us, and nobody listened. Now we have, 130, 140 bases that we suck up all our tax dollars for, and churches and corporations don't pay their fair share, and our children suffer tremendously. And the bottom line is, our American flags are made in Korea or China.
Yeah.
I talked to a dear friend that went to China. She's a Buddhist monk. She had to let her hair grow out before she goes to China, because if you're a Buddhist monk and you're in China, they will arrest you and persecute you. But while she was traveling there, she said, we're driving for 2 hours as far as the eye can see. It's nothing but factories. The people live near the factories. The is so polluted. And, most people go to, the big box stores. I'm not going to name names. I don't need a lawsuit. and it's torture. It's greed. At the middle class is dead. I have friends, and you name it, anywhere in the United States where we used to have industry. It's rust belt. It's falling apart. People can barely pay their mortgages. They have no homes. But they do come to the horror conventions and just kick it with us. And we just hope that people will wake up and buy things made in America.
Right.
And stop being fools and dupes to the global corporations who don't even live. They don't pay taxes. They don't live in America. They don't even love America.
Right.
They're promoting condominiums. I mean, it's a no-brainer. But,
exactly.
Keep people stupid. Don't let people have real education. Fear. And they can control us, and that's exactly what they're doing.
And the idea is, let's bring some American products back, because I remember growing up, my mother and I went out TV shopping, and we bought a Zenith, because it was the last TV made in America. And now that's not even there anymore. And Sean and I, we pull off a show every week, but we can't buy our gear from America because they don't make it.
That's right.
Well, I got a Behringer board. I think it's Germany, right?
There was a guy running for president who said, outsourcing is good for America.
Yeah.
These are not Americans. These are traitors.
Exactly
they take
right.
Oath of office and they wipe their ass with it.
That's it.
Let's be blunt. Let's be honest. We don't have enough time for our children to grow up and realize that they've been hosed.
Mm-hmm.
But I meet tens of thousands of parents and children every year by going to these conventions. And it's important to me because as I get older, you know, I'm not as cranky as I used to be. The thing that's important is they know the difference. As much as social media and advertising, just like from the movie The Graduate, the plastics band, holy crap.
Yeah.
On the Daily Show yesterday, I watched Jon Stewart, the captain of the Sea Shepherd, who, by the way, was shot in the chest by the Japanese whalers while he was trying to impose international whaling laws in areas they were not supposed to whale. They shot him in the heart. But he had a good trauma plate and he lived.
Wow.
Now, there is about the size of Texas, there is a pile of plastic junk that converges off the Northwest Pacific Ocean. Now, nobody talks about it. Nobody in Congress talks about it. Supreme Court thought it was so important just the other day to say, oh, unlimited funds for corporations, then frees up the little people. What a crock.
Yeah.
What a crock. They should be ashamed of themselves. But at least the Pope called out the mafia, the old guard, when they die off, their kids and siblings won't get a rat's patootie. But, you know, gave me a little bit of respect for him, even though I'm an altar boy survivor, and I don't really have a lot of respect for burning people, killing people, because they said, you know, we're not the center of the universe.
Right. This new Pope.
There's a lot of history that people need to understand and not forget. They don't teach it in school.
Exactly.
I saw Sir Charles Barkley on the Faraday Show on Golf Channel. I had a ton of respect for Mr. Barkley because he was saying, you know, we have all these collegiate sports, which makes the, why is it important? Oh, so the alumni give us money for our sports program.
Right.
Who cares?
Do you hear they're unionized, Mike?
It's a disservice. It's a disservice to our students. Why? Well, they only hire, 150 new NBA players a year?
Uh-huh.
How many people are on scholarships for school?
Exactly.
They're going to be in the NBA? No.
That's right.
So maybe they should leave their college or their alma mater with an education.
Yeah, and not in basket weaving.
Where's our focus? Where's our fun? To me, I grew up understanding what Frankenstein, Dracula, what horror films really represented.
Right.
What they represent is those qualities of human nature that are barren and not discussed in everyday society. So people like Rod Serling, who I met, had a lovely conversation with many years ago, and others, Gene Roddenberry, et cetera, Outer Limits, they can say things that would get most people all jacked up.
Right.
And hopefully it'll allow you to think, expand your consciousness, and have a touch of H factor, humanity. Without that rising, don't have children.
Yeah.
Why bring them into a world that does not have that issue?
Yeah, Sean.
So
exactly.
every single role that I have in my parts in my films, even if it's a really terrible movie, at least when I am on screen, I try to bring a little bit of that to the camera.
Well, that's where you get into a good point, Mike. You're talking about all this craziness in the world, and we're faced with it every day. I'm blue collar. I'm middle class. Nathan is as well. But you know what? People can click on the TV or go to the theater, and you're part of that escape. People can actually they're so overloaded, man. With CNN, all this tragedy, plastic floating in the ocean, da 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 da. And there's everybody's hands are they feel like their hands are tied.
Yeah, 24/7 of where's Waldo?
Right.
If you don't have the news, there's only 100,000 other areas where you can bring the news in, and then when you find some, let us know. I mean, yeah, it's a waste of air time.
It is. Hey, what would you say one of your favorite roles was, Mike, over the years?
My favorite what?
Role as an actor. What role did you play that you most connected with, you think?
My all-time favorite role was the last time I had to actually audition and fight for a role, and that was Owen Jarvis in The X-Files Season 3 Revelations.
Oh, yeah.
Since that was really huge. The movie Brutal is pretty darn good. And when my character comes on screen, he kind of controls it. I'm kind of proud of that. I've been working at it for almost 40 years. And it's not to upstage anybody else. It's just to say, if there's a story that's worth telling, let's knock it out of the park. I would have to say my X-Files role for sure. Pluto in The Hills Have Eyes, simply because it was raw, to the bone, in your face. And we were trying to express the fact through Wes Craven's storytelling that what defines humanity, what defines limits, what defines areas that we don't cross. Well, in society, we have certain ethics. There's ethics, is E word, ethics, H word, humanity. And these are very important tools for storytellers. And you have people that do stuff like Saw and this gratuitous, you know, I love my friends in special effects makeup can make, you know, body parts explode and fly out and brain. But there has to be a story.
Right.
You can't have a hero if they're just the last one standing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do we get involved in carnies? I know you have, my good friend Norman Reedus and others that are in Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a theme there. You know, there's a theme constantly that makes it worth watching. I would say also my role in Weird Science at the very end. It's a very silly role, but at the end, I talked to John Hughes, my director, and I said, he said, we're going to roll out on you on this cut, and then you're going to be all of a sudden saying something like, oh, wow, I'm so sorry. What if it's a cool feature? Okay.
Classic.
I know cinematography very well, so I, on purpose, I said, well, I don't want to lose my teaching job. That's pretty funny. But when I'm rolling the bike out, I knew they would not cut away until I got close to the door. So I, over the shoulder, while I'm moving the bike, I know they're not going to edit and cut back to something else. I say, God bless. The reason I said that was because I went to grammar school with Red Skelton's son, Richard Skelton. I used to go to the house and I used to read comic books with Richard before he died of leukemia. And Red Skelton would come up into the house, into the bedroom of his son, Richard, and read comic books with us and become like a child. Not childish, but childlike. Those are qualities that were always in Red Skelton's show. Those are the qualities that make a particular role, a lot of the roles that I've had, endearing. So that's what makes it a story worth telling. So I appreciated Weird Science for that. I also, the role of the devil in Jonathan Smith with Michael Landon on Highway to Heaven, we did that twice. And I had a lovely conversation with Mr. Landon. Also, I wish that we had not had to experience the death of my dear friend Brandon Lee in The Crow, because the cowboy character was so paramount to what the story was about, redemption, the whole story of why, James O'Barr wrote the story. You know, he wrote it during a period of grieving over the loss of his fiance who was killed by a drunk driver. I do understand that they're trying to do another Crow, and I've had conversations with James about how and if it would actually bring back the Skull Cowboy. He's been telling me that, you know, they send him a check, he tears it up, sends it back. I mean, it's not about the money, it's about the integrity of the show, of the story. If it's in graphic novel style and he has a final edit, which normally is not the case, if the studio hires a director, then the director do their version.
Right.
In my honest opinion, I don't think there'll be another Crow, but it would be lovely to have the Skull Cowboy's character brought back to life.
They should do a scene
where Brandon Lee tells the mother, as she's having the heroin pulled out of her arm, she says, your daughter needs you. Mother, God is a name for mother in the hearts and lips of all children.
Right.
That's just a killer, killer scene. I mean, you could take 40 years of a career and just offer it all up just for to be in a scene of that much magnitude.
Now,
so
Michael,
that's what we really do.
I just wanted to ask you, Michael, did they cut the Skull Cowboy from The Crow because of Brandon Lee's death?
Basically, yes, especially because he was killed. It was a tragic accident. There was debris in the barrel. It was not an assassination. All the rumors, most of the rumors are false. He got shot the night before I was to get on a plane and fly back to North Carolina for 2 weeks of just he and me, where we did the three confrontations of Skull Cowboy in the attic, where he confronts Eric Draven and says, look, I've lived your life that you are soon to live. Kill the ones that killed you, Baltar, or you'll not be reunited with your beloved. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm already dead. We did have a lot of that stuff already on camera. I actually have it on VHS at home, but I will never sell it. I've been offered all kinds of money for it. Right. I will not show it. I will not exhibit it. It's just personal. However, he died, so we never had a chance to do the three major scenes where there's three confrontations before the Skull Cowboy disintegrates and leaves.
Right.
Eric Draven's character. Now, I did have a conversation with my producer and my director once we got the news that he passed, and I was begging almost. We could film the scenes with the Eric Draven character in the marquee makeup, maybe in shadow, and maybe people would recognize. No, that's not Brandon Lee. They basically chose not to go that way or finish the scene, the movie. I can't watch any of the sequels, but he was a wonderful, wonderful gentleman and incredibly talented and lovely human being. So it's just things happen. Just like in Alabama, the filming of Greg Allman's Midnight Rider, a young lady was killed by a train. She was turned into hamburger because the director, in my opinion, and the right to work state that like to crush unions, they were filming without permission on VFX tracks it was an actual filming, according to the director. It was a test shoot. They put a bed, metal frame bed, on a live track on a train trestle, where between the train trestle that goes over, river, there's just the only escape route is wood, and some of the wood was not, it was kind of shoddy. The point is,
jeez,
they had 1 minute when they heard the whistles and the train track. The train hit the bed hit the girl. The girl tried to pick up the camera. The girl got turned into hamburger.
Wow.
And it's going to be an investigation. And I hope that whoever is responsible for doing that should be, in my opinion, prosecuted for manslaughter.
Sure.
Brandon Lee died because, in my opinion, they sent home in the state of North Carolina. After so many weeks, you could hire a local armor instead of the one you had from Los Angeles. I'm not saying that was the cause of death. I don't want to be sued. My point is that's just my opinion.
Right.
I'm a very, very safety conscious actor on the set. I trust my stunt coordinators, and if there's something not quite right, anyone and everyone has the right to say, cut, stop. I'm unsure of the safety of the situation. And that it's still, there's people on the internet that are commenting on IMDb about Midnight Rider. Armchair experts. And they go, oh, this, that. Yeah, they don't know what they're talking about. But at the Oscars, there were people wearing black ribbons in honor of Sarah. So I've been in this business for, 4 decades, and it's always everybody's responsibility to make sure people are safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like a lot of the sets that you've worked on have been kind of dangerous, A lot of the movies.
Well, there are elements of risk. David Hessen, for instance, should not have been allowed to hang on to a gun at the end of a scene, and he's playing with it, and a blank can kill you. Mm. Vic Morrow from Combat, we all know how that happened.
Yeah.
know, just because someone is looking through the camera lens or and or director and saying, hey, the shot would be much better if you got lower or you got closer and this is and that. And the, when there's stunts, the stunt coordinator is the director. And you should never push limits. People get hurt. People die. You know, so, but, you know, things happen.
Now, you were saying, saying earlier that how the, you've had some great roles and you've had some roles that, that weren't as great, and but they've all led you to where they are. If you could look back and, like, say, wow, if I could have just picked up the phone and said, no, not interested, is there a film out there that you did that you wish you hadn't?
No.
No?
And I'll tell you why. There's a movie by Charles Band called Casino of the Damned, I think it is, with Sid Haig and myself. You know, and I got to tell you, Charles wrote the script. It's a very cute script. But when we went to film it, it was directed in such a manner that was just lowbrow, you know, 14-year-old boys style, so to speak.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't cute at all. It could have been. It was the way it was edited. Performances by some newbies. I mean, long story short, I mean, I know Charles. The lead actress was his new girlfriend. She was all into her, listening to her music between every take. There's a scene where she's supposed to be very angry, and she chooses to spit, actually, in Sid Haig's face. Big loogie right on his face and everything.
What'd Sid do?
This is terrible. The set was hot. I made sure that I said cut, and when my friend stops perspiring, I said, you need to stick your head in this AC right here. And so that was a movie that could have been much better.
Yeah. It's
a very cute script, and, you know, and Charlie could make a better movie. Now, there was a film that I turned down. It was in Wisconsin. I forget the name of it. But when I got the script, I said, you know, okay, in the opening scene, I'm supposed to be brutal to this young girl. She's on her knees in front of me, and I'm supposed to say, come to daddy and drop my trowel. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, this ain't happening. Now, if you want me to be a bad guy, and then I get my just desserts later, right, and then you're heroic, and I get what I deserve, we can do that without explicit, you know, behavior. So I called my manager, and I called the director, and I recorded the conversation. I still have it on tape. I said, maybe here's a better way to go.
Yeah.
Camera's behind me. I do a little tidy up tug on my trowel. You're not going to see my ass, so you're not paying me enough. I step to the side. You see the girl. She's devastated. The audience is intelligent enough to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
And you can act. And you go, well, that's a better way to go. And I go, okay, that's how we're going to do.
Well, you know what, Mike? When I grew up,
I get on a plane. I wind up in Wisconsin. They take me straight to the set, not to my hotel. I thought I was going to the set to meet the DP and the crew and the actors. Instead, they wanted me to film that scene straight up.
Right.
And I go, how are we filming it? Oh, the original version. Oh, you changed your mind, did you? I said, no, we're having a meeting right now. I was in the cabin, had a meeting with the actress, director, writer. I said, we're not doing it this way. We're doing it the way we agreed. He goes, oh, you're being difficult, Michael. You'll never work in this. I said, stop it. Yeah. Took out my tape recorder, pushed play. I said, is this our conversation or is it not? Yeah, it is, but I think we're not doing it the other way. Therefore, you're in breach of contract. I'm going to the hotel tonight. I'm flying out on the first flight. And I expect no grief. There was no grief. They had to pay me in full right there on the spot. Mm-hmm. Breach of contract. And I'm saying this for anybody who might listen who's in the industry or thinking about it. Contracts mean something. Your integrity means something. Mm-hmm. There are classy people in our industry, and there are dogs.
Right.
Well, it's not fair to dogs to express them in that manner. Mm. But if you're ever in doubt, your integrity is important. Because once they roll film and it's out there forever. Don't sell yourself short. Right. Have some ethics. You know, have some pride in what you do.
You know, that's
true for any field.
Mike, you just said something that proves you're top shelf, buddy, and you're old school actor. You were talking about, you know,
I'm very old school.
not yet grandpa, but hey, doing the scene with the young lady. You were talking about acting. There's things the audience don't need to see. And you did that in such a brilliant way. And we had a late night horror host called Sammy Terry here in Indiana. And he came on our show before he passed away. And he said, you know, he used to talk like this, you know, and he would say, Hollywood thinks things need to be horrible. But he said, the truth is horror is in your mind and what you make of it. And he referenced to the old Frankenstein. He said, did you ever see Frankenstein throw the little girl in the water? And I said, no, you know, I never did. And he said, no. But you kind of got that idea. It left it open to your mind, you know?
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Implied fear gets under your skin. That's the idea of these stories. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to be graphic and gross and beyond that point, it's not a story. It's not a film. It's splatter porn. It's pornography.
Right.
There's a difference. And people need to understand the difference. Now, when you're talking, you know, how much box office did it make? Like, I can't stand to watch Saw.
Yeah.
And if anybody who produced or directed Saw hears this, I'm not sorry.
Right.
I walked out on it. Mm. It was nothing but torture porn. There was no purpose of it. The only people that would watch that would be Michael Vick.
Well, you know, I was...
And that's the bottom line.
I was quivering when you were talking.
I have friends that rescued some of those dogs. I have friends that still rescue those dogs.
Nice.
Anybody, any person that's involved in that kind of activity needs to go to a mental hospital and or prison, period.
Some people think...
There's a third alternative, and we don't need to discuss it.
I was saying, I was quivering in my boots before when you're talking about the girl spitting in Sid Haig's face. He's a friend of the show, and if I was talking in front of him, I'd be making sure that I didn't splatter him while I was talking. He can scare me just by standing in front of me.
I was absolutely shocked. And the only reason he didn't explode is because he was getting heat stroke. The set was very, very, very hot.
Right.
And I said, you need to cool the set down. Like I said, it was a very cute script. Somebody should take that screenplay, buy the rights, and make it what it was when I read it in my head. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, you and Sid can come down here, stay at the house, eat for free, and we'll do a film. How about that? We'll do a short.
Sorry?
I said, you and Sid can come down here and eat and sleep for free, and we can do a film. I'll go straight to the top. I'll be a famous director overnight, see?
Well, Sid is very, very talented. Ken Ford, all my brothers and sisters in the convention circuit and in our genre. You know, we've all done a lot of different things, from comedy to sci-fi to futuristic to adventure and to horror. But
right.
If you've never been to a horror convention and you're hearing this this broadcast, check one out. You'll meet the nicest people you've ever met and right. Some of the most intelligent attendees, the audience. A lot of times I'll say, you know, what have you read lately? And they actually read books. I mean, these are intelligent, wonderful people.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, Mike, we are about 12 minutes past. Judy's going to kill me. Can you tell our listeners where...
I just had a beep. That was probably Judy on the phone.
Will you vouch for me? Say, hey, listen, I was into the interview. It's not Sean's fault.
I got you back, brother.
Thanks,
I just
bub.
Want to shout out there, too. You were saying that you'll be at Tribeca. That I know that film festival goes from the 16th to the 27th. When will you be there?
Yes, sir. We're going to be showing in the shorts section. It'll be, I'll be there on the 18th. I'm flying on the 17th, flying home on the 19th. So I think we're showing One Please on Friday the 18th at Tribeca. One Please, written, produced, directed by Jesse Burke out of Arkansas.
Okay. Very good.
If people want more information on you, where do they go?
You can Google the hell out of me.
He's all over, baby.
I'm on Facebook. I'm tapped out on friend requests, but I do post some good stuff there. And most of the stuff out in Google land, about half of it is correct. So, and IMDb, there's always, you know, there's always projects people post that are, you know, we're still looking for funding, but, yeah, keep an eye open. Sleep with one eye open. What else can I say?
Well, before Sean makes me get off here, because he's afraid of Judy.
She's gonna kill me.
I'll let her know that.
I just wanted to take this last moment that I have to say thank you for Weird Science.
Yes,
you're very welcome.
That was the movie. That was one of the iconic movies of my childhood. And that moment where you guys were walking out of the house and everybody was like saying, "Sorry, you have a beautiful home."
Yeah, I know. Well, there's one scene I really, really love. I'll leave you with that. That's when Bill Paxton's talking to his brother and going, "Well, Grandma and Grandpa being a cardboard cutout in the kitchen. You think you're happy being catatonic in a closet?"
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to tell you, brother, please stay on the line for 1 minute. We just want to talk to you after the show real quick. Would that be okay?
Yeah, real quick. And I got to call Judy.
Absolutely. Okay. We're going to close out the show here. You are top shelf, and thank you so much for coming on tonight.
It's been a pleasure.
Hey, Sean, time to pay the bills.
It's time to pay the bills, little brother. Special thanks to Planet Paranormal for carrying a Stitcher, Smart Radio, Creative Commons, Susan G. Komen, 3-Day Race for the Cure, Be a Supporter, and a Cancer Fighter. Go to ghostanddemon.com. Sign up today, guys. Help us raise money to fight cancer. Very real, very serious threat. Souls Denounced, that's Creations by Souls Denounced, soulsdenounced.com. Make sure you go over there and check that out. Midnight Syndicate, thanks for the tunes. Hey, from the haunted back roads of America, this has been another G&D exclusive interview. Don't go changing America, you know we won't. Demon Hunter!
Because we love you.
Night, guys.
Good night. Hey, is this rolling?